Sick. You were
Perfect.
ready to get started.
Okay, so let's go to Matthew 24, y'all. Matthew chapter 24. Kate Jane, our audio cut out for a second. Just to clear away confusion, can you update everybody real quick on the ladies' study tomorrow night, please?
Yes, we will be meeting for dinner at Fazoli's in Hillview. Jerry will be joining us from South Carolina via Zoom, but she will be, so she will be joining in, and the rest of us will be at the building or online.
Perfect. All right. So Zoom room is open tomorrow night?
Yes, sir, it is.
Perfect. All righty. So anybody wants to, again, 6 Fazoli's Hillview, 7 o'clock building, or also online. All righty. Which y'all, by the way, I don't think Jerry's on tonight. So she is with her daughter in South Carolina. I'll tell y'all, she has just absolutely amazed me with the level of study she's put into this. She called me last Thursday and she said, Ryan, I need to ask you a question. I'm reading through James 1:17. Every good gift given and every good thing is from the above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. What are your thoughts on divine immutability? And she then had a few questions about a dialogical approach to divine immutability versus a classical theistic approach. And she had spent like a week just studying into this. And we had a great conversation. I don't know if I was any help at all, but probably confused her more than she already was, if anything. But it has just been such a blessing to get to just have more conversations with her about scripture. She's called me before all the studies and just has such astute questions and observations about the text. I really hope that y'all are taking advantage of that class. I just am so thankful of her doing that. So let's look at Matthew 24. We are going to keep trudging away in Matthew chapter 24 tonight, but I want to try to give, again, a context to this. Because again, and I think we saw this last week, if you get a context for Matthew 24 and know what's going on in the chapter, then you're able to read through it. And it makes, I think, a great lot more sense. So let's just do a quick review together. My keys to Matthew 24. Keys to Matthew 24. This is on the May 18th handout on the front. The first key is the temple. Matthew 24 is about the temple, period, end of discussion. Everything in Matthew 24 is about the temple. Jesus had just looked at the temple and said it will be thrown down. And so then his disciples asked them, verse 3, when will these things be? When will the temple be destroyed? What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So again, we put those together, and we talked about this last week. The destruction of the temple is going to overlap with the end of the age, which is going to overlap with the coming of the Son of Man, okay? So it's not different events, but it's talking about different activities of one time. Okay, so that's really important to note as you go into Matthew 24. And I think last week we saw it's really helpful if you note that. The second thing is the focus. Jesus wants his followers to focus on faithfulness to him, not speculation of the signs of the time. I think we again focused on that last week, that you don't go around looking for 666. I learned in my research for this week that there was once a time that JFK received 666 electoral votes. And oh, gracious, now we have to watch for the signs of the times. Last night was election night. Look at North Carolina and look for the signs of the time, right? It's a great thing. But, look, that's not to be our focus. We're to focus on Jesus, okay? The last thing is apocalyptic. Matthew 24 is written as apocalyptic literature. And Otis shared this with me last week, and I appreciate the way he worded this. The reason that there is this type of language of the darkening of the sun and the moon giving its light, the stars falling from heaven, the powers of heaven shaken, is there needs to be equally strong language to match the gravity of these events, okay? You can imagine today, if our Capitol and Justice Building and White House were to fall all in one day, you would not wake up the next day and check your news feed and see a small event happened in D.C. today. It would be filled with just grand hyperbolic statements at the end and what had happened. And that's what Jesus is doing here. And so much as we have to be very careful of over-literalizing Revelation, I think we have to be equally careful of over-literalizing Matthew 24, because that's just simply not what Jesus is doing, okay? And then in bold here, I think this has probably for me been the most helpful thing that I've realized and just really been useful with Matthew 24 and Revelation as well. Apocalyptic literature does not focus on the end of the world, but on the unveiling of a new age, okay? Whenever we read apocalyptic, we don't need to get so caught up in the end. We always need to be looking toward the unveiling of the new. Jesus is going to do that, especially tonight. He's going to start out in this section and tell us, don't get so focused on the end, focus on the new beginning, the unveiling. Okay, remember in Greek, that word apocalypsis means unveiling. Focus on that unveiling of the new beginning. And then this is my diagram to kind of explain Matthew 24. I really truly think this is what Matthew 24 is all about, is the pains of the present age are giving birth to the Son of Man in a new age. Everything that was going to happen within the generation were the birth pains that was preparing the whole world for the coming of the Son of Man. And then, verse 14 of the chapter, the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. All of the trials and tribulations that will happen in Jerusalem within the generation were to be expected. They were birth pains. And so Christians of the first century and Christians today were not to have any despair over the fall of Jerusalem, but rather were to know those were but merely birth pains, giving way for the Son of Man to come as the ruler of the whole earth. And that's what Matthew 24 is focusing our hearts on. All right. So tonight we're going to pick up and talk about the fig tree, which obviously I just love the pieces. But let's get a context here. Matthew 24, I'm going to begin in verse 29. Matthew 24, verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened. The moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven. The powers of the heaven will be shaken. Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man. And all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and glory. And he will send out his angels with a loud trumpet call. And they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. From the fig tree, learn this lesson. Stop! What fig tree is he talking about? From the fig tree, learn this lesson. Don't answer. Someone other than Eric, what fig tree is he talking about?
One that was barren and didn't.
Robin, get this. Robin, yeah, let Robin get this, Randy. Go ahead.
The one that was barren and didn't produce any fruit.
There you go. Okay. See me tomorrow, Robin. I'll make you some brownies, all right? Yes, look back to Matthew 21. I am convinced that this is what Jesus is talking about, okay? Run to my office real quick and get what's on my little desk. Okay, I'm going to use between my chairs. I'm going to do a visual demonstration real quick. I should have brought this with me, okay? Let Eric go get my, thank you, Eric. So this is a gift from Mark and Vicky, and I now keep it in my office year round. So let me use this as my visual demonstration for the evening, okay? So here we have our demonstration, all right? So we have our barren tree. I am convinced this is what Jesus does in Matthew 21. Matthew 21, Jesus enters Jerusalem. Matthew 21, verse 18, in the morning, he was returning to the city. He became hungry. Seeing a fig tree on the wayside, he went to it and found nothing but only leaves. He said to it, may no fruit ever come from you once again. And the fig tree withered at once. So now, y'all, what's happened to this fig tree? Bruce, talk through this with me. What's happened to the fig tree?
Right now?
Yeah, within Matthew 21, what's happened to the fig tree?
So it has leaves, it has no fruit. So he cursed it and it withered. It will never produce fruit now.
Exactly, right?
It's barren.
Jesus looks at this fig tree and he sees it's barren. And so he curses it. He curses the fig tree. And you'll notice then that fig tree, and we talked about this in Matthew 21, that fig tree was a symbol of spiritually dead Israel. The religious leaders of the Israel of Israel were, yeah, goodness, y'all. It's on this end right here, so we will figure that out. I'm sorry, y'all. We're having a trouble with one of our cords. Give me 1 second.
You had me confused there for a minute because you pull out a Charlie Brown tree and you're talking about figs.
You said it's not a fig tree.
Well, it's barren.
Yeah, we don't matter.
As long as you can hear.
Yeah.
And they can hear you.
Hey, let's do this real quick. Lauren, take me to HDMI 2. All right. Our HDMI cord's acting up on us tonight. I'm not sure why. All right. So within Matthew 21, he looks at the fig tree. And he curses the fig tree, okay? The fig tree is cursed, and it's never going to produce fruit again. Well, then you look over to Matthew chapter 24, and I want y'all to know what happens. He says in Matthew 24, verse 32, from the fig tree, learn its lesson. Do y'all think maybe Jesus went right back to that fig tree, pointed at the fig tree that he had cursed, and said, from the fig tree, learn its lesson. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. What's happened to the fig tree? It looks like the fig tree has died. It looked like the fig tree is going to pass away. As soon as its branches become tender and puts out its leaves, you will know that summer is near. Do y'all notice that even the fig tree that is cursed, it's not destined to be over with forever? But there is going to be a newness of life that comes from this fig tree. And I think that's what Jesus is exhorting the disciples of in Matthew 24, is he's telling them, as soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. You know that summer is near. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? It means that a new beginning is going to come, okay? The fig tree was one of the few trees within Jerusalem that would have a off season, shed its leaves, come back, but it's resurrection. Okay. It's resurrection imagery. And that's what Matthew 24 is all about. Matthew 24 is all about, yes, the present age is going to pass away. The temple will be destroyed. Your life as you know it is going to be shattered, but there is coming a time when resurrection will happen. The Son of Man will come. And a new beginning will come, okay? So, alas, when you see all these things, you know that he is near at the very gates. Well, it'd be more helpful if he hadn't used the words "these things." Whenever you see all these things, I think he's talking about all of the warnings, all the way back from verse 4 down through verse 26. Whenever you see the abomination of desolation, which is the foreign Roman army entering Jerusalem. Whenever you see the Roman army enter into Jerusalem, you know that the Son of Man is near at the very gates. Okay. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Notice the promise. This generation will not pass away until all these things take place. About 40 years is a generation within a Bible, okay? And for us today as well. A generation is about 40 years. Within 40 years, these things are going to happen. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. What's the promise of the Lord? Everything is going to change. Everything is going to change, but I promise you, my word's faithful. My word is faithful. You can trust me. Whenever the abomination of desolation comes, when the foreign army comes in, head to the mountains. Get out. Get out. And everything that is going on in here in Jerusalem is but birth pains, preparing the whole world for the coming of the Son of Man, who is now, at this time, seated at the right hand of the Father, ruling over the nations. That's what Jesus is preparing his disciples for. Okay.
So would you understand the heaven and earth that's passing away, like the fig tree, the one that's cursed? So like the curse,
yes,
tree will pass away, but something new will take its place.
Exactly, right? Whenever you look at heaven and earth, what he's talking about here is heaven. If you go back to Matthew 23, and it says in verse 9, call no man father on earth, for you have one father in heaven. Okay? Heaven is where God is. Earth is where humanity is. It's like saying everything is going to change. My word is faithful. My word is faithful. And that word is going to sustain the change. Yeah, I do. I think that's simply what he's talking about.
It makes sense of like earth passing away. The earth that is doomed to decay and death will pass away. And there's a new one that's blessed and promised resurrection life. It's right. Taking its place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Jane, that's a fantastic question. It's a fantastic question. Jane asked in the comment box, is this another tree taking its place, or is it the renewal of the original fig tree? If you look back to Isaiah 11 and Isaiah 27, which are the two most important chapters of the Old Testament. Throw Isaiah 5 in there. Let me give you those three chapters. Isaiah 5, Isaiah 11, and Isaiah 27 that compare Israel to a tree. It seems that tree is going to be renewed. There's a renewal of the tree. And from that renewing of the tree, then it's going to have a resurrected state. So it's a renewal, a restoration of the tree. That's my current understanding of that, but it's a really good question. Yeah, do you have further thoughts on that, Jane?
No, I was reading it as a renewal, but just from some of the commentary, I wasn't sure we were saying renewal or replacement. And I don't know that it really matters, but
what does it does it does. I think it's renewal. A similar language is used in Romans 11 about us being brought in to the fig tree. But again, I think it's this idea of again renewal and resurrection that's going to happen.
Hey Brian,
she's the first king to fall on her reclamation.
No, go ahead. Let me get Daniel first, Bruce. Go ahead.
In the time of Solomon, that's when the kingdom was most established. In 1 Kings 4:25, it says, so Judah and Israel lived in safety, every man under his vine and his fig tree.
Huh.
It was time of stability and security there.
What was that verse, Daniel?
1 Kings 4:25.
That's a great connection. I'm going to look into that. I've never made that before, but it makes a great deal of sense. It has Jonah language in there, too. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Bruce, go ahead.
Well, what he said is a connection. We had a president during the Depression that said, you know, when he made promises, he said a chicken in every pot, right? And I like what Daniel said about the sign of prosperity being every man sitting under his own fig tree. That's pretty cool, because there is something there about fig trees, because they're rarely mentioned, but when they are mentioned, they're significant. So throw that there. But my question was this.
Yeah, and hey, that was the verse Danny mentioned, 1 Kings 4:25. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah. As confusing as Matthew 24 is, there's a few things that really start to click with me and harmonize. And I would like, if you don't mind, would you connect verse 34 with verse 14 and then throw in Colossians 1:6 for me?
So tell me those verses one more time.
Okay, Matthew 24:34. Uh-huh. Connect it back with verse 14 to keep it in context. And then add Colossians 1:6. And just to let you know, Colossians 1:6 is where Paul has told the Colossians that the gospel has been preached to the whole world.
Are you talking about 26, Colossians 1:26?
It's actually verse 6, 1:6. The gospel which has come to you is indeed in the whole world. So can you connect those three, please?
Let me just do those in chronological order, because it's a good question. If you go back to verse 14, he says the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. Then the end will come. Okay.
Can I stop there just for a minute?
Yeah.
As I was growing up, this verse was twisted in my mind to say that the end of the planet will occur after the gospel has been preached throughout the entire world for a number of years.
Yeah.
Okay. That does not fit the context of this chapter.
No, not at all. What I think he's talking about in verse 14, we have to ask, what is the end? Okay, what is the end? Right. I think the end he's talking about is the end of the present age under the present powers. Okay, remember, go back to our two ages.
I'm still connecting it to the destruction of the temple.
Yes, that was the sign. Right, Terry. But remember here, y'all, that the temple was the place that signified Jewish power. Jewish power was within the temple. So, I mean, much as if we were to say today that Congress has fallen, there's not much of a difference between saying that the Capitol's fallen and Congress has fallen.
Right. And the nation has fallen.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all three synonymous.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Carrie. Go ahead. I can tell you what happened.
Because heaven and earth will pass away.
What's your question?
What does it mean heaven and earth will pass away if we're only talking about the temple?
It's the temple. I think he's talking about the temple.
Oh, okay.
He's talking about the temple.
Come together.
Yeah, I know. Why doesn't he say the temple then?
Why does he talk in apocalyptic language to begin with?
Well, good question.
Right? I mean, again, that's that desire we have to just make Jesus really literal. Let's just have to say really literal stuff. But that's just the way that
Jesus... Hey, Brian, I can help with that too. Hey, Carrie. Think about this. You know, last week we talked about 9/11, and Alan Jackson wrote a song called "Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning?" So the question is, if you walked up to anybody and said, "Did the world stop turning on 9/11? A lot of people would say, "Yes, it did. The world came to a complete stop on 9/11. But in actuality, it didn't. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about. Heaven and earth passed away the day that the Jewish nation was ended.
Yes. And look what Stephen Karen just said. For the Jews, the destruction of the temple would be like the end of the world, right? You know, for us, again, if our capital is destroyed, it's like the end of our nation, the end of the world, the end of the age, okay? The end of the present age is going to happen. Well, back to verse 14, what does that mean? The gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Okay. Well, again, you have this widening out of the kingdom proclamation. It's through the destruction of Jerusalem, through the destruction of the small, that then the large expansion is going to come. And I think that's what he's getting at there, is you have a widening of the kingdom beyond the small gathering in Jerusalem to now the Son of Man as the reign over the whole earth. So it's a renewal in that humanity. Oh, gracious, how big do I take this?
I know. It's like, when did the new covenant begin? How do you put a finger on that?
Yeah, it's a 40-year gap. let me just use this, right? I mean, Adam was meant to be the first king priest. Gone through this 100 times. I'm happy to again if I need. But Adam was meant to be the first king priest over the whole earth. Well, he failed. That role then gets kind of narrowed down and whittled down a little bit. And then you don't have this Son of Man ruler until Jesus. It's now Jesus is going to be the one who is going to come as the new power over everything. Let me try to help y'all out here by visualizing this a little bit. Y'all, the temple, okay, that is the key to understanding this whole chapter. The temple is the place where heaven and earth were going to come together. And also, in a sense, the temple is the place where the present age was going to give way to the age to come. Here's what Jesus is saying. He's saying this temple, which signifies the present powers, this temple, which signifies the present rule, this temple, which signifies the fallen order, it's going to pass away. It's going to pass away. And it's going to be a brutal, difficult, horrendous times. But all of these birth pains, are giving way to a new temple who is going to come. This temple is going to be the Son of Man. And then this Son of Man is going to be the true ruler. He will bring in the age to come. He will bring heaven to earth. But it's preparing us for this temple. Again, it's all about temple.
The place that, and just a place that housed God's glory will now be expanded so that God's glory will cover
everything,
all of the earth.
Everything,
as,
right?
As the seas cover.
Absolutely.
The earth is going to cover it that much.
It's like, and again, this is all about growth and growing in that the temple of Solomon was not meant to grow, but now the temple of God is meant to grow. Colossians is all about temple. I don't have time to show this, but Colossians is all about temple. But what God is wanting of his temple now is growth in the temple. But it's because Jesus is now the priest in the temple, and all of this has come together. Again, Matthew 24 is a weighty chapter, y'all. You have to have some theological grounding before you get into this. Okay?
Can I ask one more question?
Please, always.
Was there only one temple there in Jerusalem at the time?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
Yes. So it seems, Carrie, that we get confused now because if you look at Jerusalem, there's the Dome of the Rock and there's other buildings, etc. But now the temple, and this was that image that I showed on Sunday morning from Nathan. The temple would have been the skyline; it would have dominated Jerusalem.
Thank you.
Yeah. Uh huh. All right, well, let's keep going then, y'all. Let's keep going. Again, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. If you read Matthew 24, it's talking about the second coming. That's a very difficult verse to get around because it didn't happen. At least I don't think it did. Heaven and earth are going to pass away, but my words will not pass away. Again, Jesus is saying, the world as you know it is going to change, but my word is faithful. Don't get concerned. And y'all, that's again what I'm really hoping we get out of this chapter. Don't be concerned by the turmoil and the changes and the ups and the downs of this world. Things are going to pass away. Things will change, but the word of the Lord will not pass away. But verse 36, let's go out of the frying pan into the fire. Goodness, this is the verse I was huffing at earlier.
You can do it.
But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father only. Okay. I put my question 5. What do we make of verse 36? Question. This is a verse I have agonized over, but look forward to hearing your thoughts on. Before I hear y'all's thoughts, I want to ask you all a question. Okay. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. Does the Spirit know the day and the hour?
Father only.
It seems like it. But if you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 2, it says in verse 10, God has revealed these things through the Spirit, for the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. Know about that, Jamie? What do you think?
Spirit.
Right?
Good answer.
Good answer. I've had this question about that verse for a while, and I think it's often ignored. Does the Spirit know the day and the hour? Or is it the Father only? And if it's the Father only, how do we explain that the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God?
Well, he searches. It doesn't say he finds.
Maybe. That's certainly an option that Augustine took.
Brian.
Augustine took that option. Yeah. Go ahead.
Can I do some deductive reasoning here?
Uh-huh.
With this very verse. Notice who, let's not worry about who knows. Let's worry about who doesn't know. Jesus says, no man knows and no angel knows. He didn't say he didn't know.
Yeah.
He says no man knows and no angel knows.
Yeah. So there is a textual variant here. The King James is going to read differently from ESV because scribes over the centuries have struggled with this passage.
It says no one knows in some translations. So
Al, go ahead.
What I take from this is he's telling us to be ready at all times.
There you go. Move on.
That's perfect. Right?
There you go. Move on. Okay. I think what Al said is all we need to know about this. I really do. There are some theologians that have tried to build whole theologies of the relationship between the Father and the Son out of this verse. I'm not comfortable doing that. I have other alternatives to reading this verse that I'm happy to talk about one-on-one. But I think we also don't hold on to a verse like Matthew 11:27. All things have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son chooses to reveal it.
Amen.
Matthew 24:36 is a challenging verse theologically. I'm not going to give y'all an alternative reading. I'm happy to talk about it one-on-one. There's an alternative interpretation I lean toward with this that would explain what's going on here. But I think what Al said is all we need to get out of this. I really do. The specific day and the specific hour does not matter. Move on. Okay? All right. So then, yeah, I've seen Karen say, thank. It wasn't for them to know. Again, it's not focusing on the when, it's focusing on the who. Don't focus on the when, focus on the who. Tina said something similar a couple weeks ago to me. Now, keep on then. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. As were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Notice this, okay? Notice this. Jamie, can you erase for me real quick while I read? Because I want to do another diagram, and I don't want to take a break. Okay, look at verse 38. Look at verse 38. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. All right, now I want us to note this. Thank you, Jamie. Whenever you look at what's going on here in this verse, y'all, I want us to note that there is going to be a connection between Noah and the Son of Man, okay? And then there are going to be two options. You're first going to have those that are going to be swept away. Okay? And why were they swept away? Why were they swept away?
Unbelievers.
Yes. Yes, unbelievers, right?
They didn't prepare.
Yes, yeah. They were
distracted. Actually, they didn't listen.
Yeah, they didn't listen, right? They didn't listen. I'm just gonna put that. They didn't listen, okay? They didn't listen, okay?
I think that's really important to list it that way, Ryan, because Noah prepared them for 120 years. It wasn't like God didn't wake up one day and say, all right, I'm destroying the earth with a flood. They had 120 years notice.
Yep. I mean, Noah was a prophet who preached, and still for 120 years, they did not listen. The other option is there were those that were going to be saved. All right, now, this is what he then says. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day came when Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Okay?
Yeah.
Then two men will be left in the field. One will be taken, one will be left. One will be taken, one will be left. I want us to overlap taking and the one who's left. Okay, one is taken, one is left. Does taken match up with one or two? Notice carefully the verbs. And I'll go ahead and tell y'all my thought, because I don't want to try to contradict anybody. I think that he's connecting this. The one who's taken is like the one that is swept away. The one who is saved was the one who was left.
Yeah.
And y'all notice this? Those that were swept away is similar to those that are taken. Those that are saved are those that are left. Well, why does the text lead us this way? It says, they were unaware until the flood came and swept them away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken. One will be swept away. One will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken, that is swept away. One will be left. Okay, do y'all notice this? Now, why is this important to note? Well, you know, I'm just going to put this word up here. And then for those of you that know where I'm going, great. For those that don't, that's fine. We'll move on. But what's the real meaning of that? I don't think that means what a lot of people think it means.
Right.
Within the parable, the one that's left is actually the one saved. Now, if you put this within the context of the sacking of Jerusalem, yeah, the Roman army is going to come in. There's going to be one man they're going to take. You do not want to get taken by the Roman army. And then for whatever reason, there's others going to be left behind. Yeah, they're not going to take everybody. Two women are going to be at the mill. One's going to get taken, one's going to get left. You don't want to be the one that's taken. Right? What do you need to do then? He exhorts them, therefore, stay awake. Stay awake, for you do not know on what day the Lord is coming. You do not know on what day the Lord is coming. Now, again, y'all, do you notice how much better this fits a reading of AD 70 than the second coming? I've yet to read a good amillennial explanation of this passage that relates it to the second coming. But when applied to AD 70, it makes a great deal of sense. What his warning is, you need to stay awake. What that means is, whenever the abomination of desolation comes, get out. Get out. Get out. That's going to be the sign of the birth pains of the present age and that the Son of Man is coming. And the Son of Man is going to come in judgment. The Son of Man is going to come in judgment, and no longer will the dying fruit tree be the center of power. But the Son of Man is the one who is the resurrected tree that all authority is going to flow from. Okay? That's what the coming of the Son of Man is. Therefore, stay awake. Stay awake. Be sober. You know, this is what he urged them in the very beginning of the chapter. Whatever he had told them in, for example, verse 13, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. Stay awake. Stay awake. Verse 42, stay awake. You do not know on what day your Lord is coming. Okay? None of them. None of them, none of them, none of them, none of them knew what day the Lord is coming.
He's in the swift, decisive, and unexpected.
Go ahead, Al, I didn't hear you.
I said he's indicating swift, decisive, and unexpected judgment.
Absolutely, right?
Amen.
Absolutely. That's his warning. And y'all, again, it's a warning to them. Listen to me. When the abomination of desolation comes, get out. Get out. You don't know if you're going to have 5 days. You don't know if you're going to have 1 day. You don't know if you're going to have a year. Get out.
Yeah.
Get out, get out, get out, get out, get out.
Ryan, that comparison to the story of Noah is brilliant in every detail, because the long-suffering of God with Judea for 40 years after this lesson is taught is brilliant, because God was long-suffering with the world in the times of Noah and that preaching. And like Jesus said in verse 14, the gospel has to be preached around the world before this event's going to come, so that everybody has a chance to be saved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Ryan?
Yes. Yes, Mark, go ahead.
You've really given some fascinating insight here. And I'm also wondering if this attribute of God, let's call it, is applicable throughout this kingdom age, even to the end of it. For instance, if we should see the end of it, you know, we are told in 2 Peter 3 that God is not slow, but that in his workings, but a day is as a thousand years, and a thousand years as a day, and he is wanting more people to be saved. Why he seems to be slow in his actions. So I also want to ask you a question about the knowledge of when things like this are going to happen. Is it possible that instead of saying that God knows, only the Father knows, could you actually say only the Father will be deciding, and that his decision is malleable, changeable according to his patience and love?
Yeah, I don't think about that, Mark. I've not given that interpretation thought before. I'm gonna have to give that thought. It's certainly a worthy interpretation, but yeah, let me give that some thought. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah,
Brian.
Yeah, Robin, let me make one observation real quick before you go. One thing Jeff and Cindy had shared in the chat was that there is a great connection here, and I've not thought about this before, between the wheat and the chaff. You know, if you think about what is going to be taken, the wheat is that which is going to be left, and then here you have the chaff that is going to be taken. So yeah, that's a great, great, great. There's lots of parallels to Matthew 13 in this chapter, but I think it's a really good comparison I've not thought of. And Helen's thought as well, I think is really what this chapter is getting to. And she says, just get your house in order at all times. That's it. The when is not for us to know. It's not for us to even be concerned about. It's focus on Christ, focus on faithfulness to him. That's the what we need to focus on. Now, Robin, go ahead, please.
Okay, here goes my brownies, because this is a goofy question. But sure. You're talking about, you keep saying get out, you know, but where are they supposed to, I'm kind of lost here. I'm not understanding, where are they supposed to go, or what are, you know, and
is he talking about us?
Yeah, I mean, am I making sense? I'm not understanding where they're what they're supposed to, I know they're, are you understanding what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. If you haven't taken the time to listen to Tom Hamilton's sermon I sent out last week about Matthew 24, he does an excellent job of tracing the history of this. Uh-huh. And he shows that actually the Christians listened historically. Whenever AD 70 happened, the Jews stayed in Jerusalem trying to make a final hurrah. They got massacred. The Christians fled from Jerusalem and went to the surrounding areas during the abomination. They were saved. So he's just saying, get out of Jerusalem. It doesn't matter where you go. Get out of Jerusalem. Get out of Judea and flee. Okay. Okay. They're going to become refugees, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
And Ryan, it's interesting to note as well that some of the Jews in the first century went ahead and made a life outside of Jerusalem. Maybe because of this teaching, we don't know, but a lot of Jews went ahead and left Judea and built a life in the Gentile world.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Like to all nations, maybe. Yeah. Let's keep going in. Verse 43. But know this. Do y'all notice this? We don't know when it's going to happen, but know this. But know this. That if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Now, some want to say that this is like Jesus coming back. I'm very uncomfortable with that. It seems much more about you don't know when this foreign oppressor is coming in. You don't know. You don't know. The master of the house is wanting to preserve you. Therefore, you must be ready. You must be ready. For the Son of Man is coming in an hour when you do not expect. Okay? This is talking about then the full judgment that is going to happen upon wickedness. The Son of Man is coming. But you do not know the hour. You don't even think about it. All you need to know is whenever the abomination of desolation comes, go. Who then is faithful and wise servant? Whom his master has set over the household to give them food at the proper time. Blessed is the servant who his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set them over his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to him, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of the servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and an hour that he does not know. Again, do y'all notice that? A day and an hour that they do not expect. He will cut him in pieces and put him in with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Again, he's warning them. The end is going to come. The temple will be destroyed. The end of the ages will come. The Son of Man is going to come in judgment upon the present age. You're not going to know when. You're not going to know when. All you need to know is, notice the abomination. The Son of Man is going to rule over the whole earth from that, and be faithful to the Lord. That's what Matthew 24 is all about.
He's reiterating, be ready.
That's it. And yeah, just very briefly then. Yeah, just very briefly, y'all. You know, is Matthew 24 then about AD 70 or about what we call the second coming? I think it's primarily, of course, about AD 70, but there's certainly application then for us. Like, I think likewise, I would not look at Matthew 24 to make this point. I would look at other texts in the New Testament to show this. I don't think that Christians know when the Lord's going to come back. I think that Jesus will return one day at a day and an hour that none of us know. Be ready. Be ready. It's applicable there. Okay, it's applicable there, but it's just not the central frame of reference. Jeff, Cindy, go ahead.
Just a quick comment from a little life lesson. When I was nailing up floors, Kenneth Martin was our boss, and he drove a diesel van. Very loud, you could always hear him coming. He would pull up on jobs, shut the van off down the street, coast up to the job, and then come walking in through the back door to see what was being done. You just had to, if you were working, it was no problem. And if you weren't working, you got caught. So right. That's happened in life.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great analogy. Yep. That explains why Randy Kingery always stops his truck out on the main road before he walks up to the church building. I'm just kidding. Kidding. All right.
I'm laughing.
All right. It sounds like it. All right. Other thoughts. Other thoughts.
That's true. Ryan, you talk about a lot of the teachings of Jesus. They may apply on that day, that week, that month, but they also apply throughout time. Yes. And I think this is one of them. The concept of being prepared was for that audience that day that he was speaking. But that concept doesn't stop with that audience. Like Al said, well, like everybody said, that context stays with us throughout our lives.
Absolutely, right? I mean, if I wanted to talk about the second coming, I'd look at Romans 8. And in pretty much what you see in Matthew 24 with the destruction of Jerusalem, you see in Romans 8 with the second coming of Christ. We don't know when it's going to be. You stay faithful to the Lord because you know he's coming back for the redemption of his people. So it's the same message, just with a different area of application.
So then let me press you with a question.
Sure.
Is Matthew 24 talking about the end of the world, the planet?
I don't think it is. No, I don't. I just don't see that within Matthew 24. Yeah.
I think it's been very helpful, Ryan, to tie the three things together, the destruction of the temple, the sign of the times, the coming of the Son of Man, are all one event, or are all tied to one event. So and that is the end of the age, correct?
Correct.
And so, and then I think we can take this, as has just been said, for ourselves and look at it. It is applicable for the fulfillment of the coming of the end of the age, for the future, when the kingdom of God is all that exists.
Absolutely. Right. And exactly. And again, I really appreciate that. And that for me was one of my very helpful shifts in reading this chapter, was holding those things together. And there's so many difficulties of the chapter that I really think go away. I mean, one of the obvious ones is, how in the world did this apply to a second coming context? You get yourself in many theological troubles if you start applying that to a second coming context. Apply it to 87 context. Oh, I see what's going on here. I see what's going on. There's a foreign power coming in. But when you hold the whole thing together, again, it's all about the end of the present age of present powers giving birth to the Son of Man. That's Matthew 24.
If you try to make that concept fit with the end of the world, you're going to have to add another doctrine of your own.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to me, right? And that's why I think the 80-70 approach to Matthew 24 just makes a great deal of sense. Y'all, just to be extremely clear, I think there are other passages in the New Testament that do talk about a second return of the Lord. I just don't think Matthew 24 is one of them.
I think it's pretty interesting that Paul talks more about the second coming of Jesus than Jesus talks about the second coming of Jesus.
Well, you know what's fascinating? Gracious, I'd like to do some sermons on this. This was something I realized in preparing for this. I'm not going to go there. I said I'm done 7 minutes early. I'm going to make myself a note. I'll do a sermon series on Paul's theology of the second coming. Okay, I will do a sermon series about Paul's theology of the second coming. I don't know when, but I don't know the day and the hour, but I'll do it sometime. All right. You all, thank you for being supportive and tolerating my anxieties about this chapter. I think I've worked through a lot of my trauma of Matthew 24, and now I find it a very encouraging, exhorting chapter. I would really appreciate y'all's just help and encouragement as we work through this chapter. So we'll then start working through Matthew 25 next week. We'll probably just do the parable of the 10 virgins next week. I don't think we'll have time to do much more than that. So we'll go into that chapter next week. All right, before I hand it over to Kirby, any other thoughts tonight? Go ahead.
No. Are we having the 10 o'clock Thursday morning class tomorrow?
Yes, we sure are, buddy. Yep.
Okay.